listener production.
A warning. This episode contains graphic descriptions of intimate partner violence. Please listen with care. Welcome to Crime Insiders Forensics. For those joining us for the first time, my name's Catherine Fox. I'm a former GP, crime author, and screenwriter. I'm enthralled by forensics and have spent thousands of hours researching for books and screenplays. So I thought, why not turn my research into a podcast? Every week, you'll be joining me in discovering how forensic science is helping solve high-profile crimes in Australia and around the world. This week, debunking a long-held forensic myth involving pigs and human remains. Popular crime shows and fiction suggest that the best way to dispose of a body is by feeding it to pigs.
We've all assumed, as you know, talk of the town, that pigs will destroy a human body and that only human teeth survive the digestive process.
An accused murderer whose wife disappeared under suspicious circumstances was said to have told multiple people that pigs devour an entire human body without leaving a trace. As listeners of this show will know, it's more difficult to successfully prosecute an alleged murderer without a body. That's where today's guest, forensic anthropologist Penny McArdle's expertise, becomes crucial. Not just to this case, but many others across the globe.
We drove out to where the pig farm used to be and took one look at it and went, oh my God.
To begin, Penny explains exactly what the role of a forensic anthropologist is.
Well, a forensic anthropologist or biological anthropologist are people who examine human remains. We work out at what we call a biological profile, so the age, sex, ethnicity, height, or ancestry, height, things like that, and possible causes of death if there's any trauma to the bone. Whereas an anthropologist studies culture of human populations.
Because at the moment, most people's memories or thoughts of a forensic anthropologist are bones. Kathy Reichs wrote the book series. I've actually met Kathy. She's a lovely, lovely human being. But most people sort of think about that from the Bones television series or the book series that she wrote. Does that irritate you or is that reasonably accurate, do you think?
Look, it doesn't worry me. When people look at me and go, huh, what's that? And I say, do you know the TV show Bones? And they're like, yeah. I said, yeah, that's what I do. And they're, oh, okay. They understand it then. I mean, some of the methods they use on the TV show and whatnot, you know, just are out there. But basically that's what I do, yes.
We've seen in popular culture, in so many TV shows and film, you've had mobsters disposing of bodies in pig pens or people allegedly, going back to the 1700s, 1800s, allegedly feeding bodies to their pig to disguise murders and get away with it. And yet we didn't know if that's folklore or fact. So how did you come into the investigation?
I was the forensic anthropologist and archaeologist on a cold case up at Walgett. And we undertook many excavations throughout Walgett, looking at different possible locations of the deceased. And it became apparent that the accused had mentioned to a few people that the best way to get rid of a body was to feed it to the pigs. And at the time, the accused had something to do with a pig farm up at Walgett as well. So I did some research and realised that there was no research anywhere in the world that actually tested that theory. And so the detectives and I approached New South Wales Police Science Unit and discussed the possibility of undertaking this research to test whether that assumption was true or not and then what that would mean for our case and any other cases in the future as well.
What were the police investigating?
They were investigating the disappearance of Roxalyn Bowie. Roxalyn went missing about 40 years ago. And it was my understanding that she left a note saying that she was just leaving and then she hadn't been seen or heard of since.
Two young children were left asleep in the home. Her husband was at the pub, allegedly, and she just went missing and left the children. That's the theory.
That was the theory, yeah.
Obviously, people at the time were a bit suspicious about that, given that she was supposedly a loving mother. And I gather some people in that case had reported that she had seen, had a black eye, bruising, and suspected domestic violence. So that raised some alarm, but not enough alarm, obviously. But then 40 years later, you're invited to help with the investigation. So where did you start and what did you have to do?
Well, I arrived at Walgett, just told that we had a dam that we needed to excavate, that they thought that she might be in the dam. So we get there, we have a massive team of police to help us do the physical work as well. And then we realised pretty much straight away that this dam is not full of water at all. It was full of grey silt, which changed our methodology completely. So we had to get excavators and scrapers in, and what we would have to do is scrape back 10 to 20 centimetres at a time to be able to see what was there. And because it was grey, anything in that dam was clearly evident and quite easy to see. We were picking up fishing line. We were picking up cans, like anything and everything that was there, we were able to see quite easily. We also uncovered an intact, completely preserved wooden dinghy at the bottom of the dam. So if the deceased was there, we would definitely have found her remains there, clearly. But unfortunately, no, she wasn't in the dam.
Can you please take us through what happens during an excavation?
Every site is different, and you have to be flexible to be able to change your methodology. But the way we plan it is we have a review first with people involved in the case, and we look at aerial photographs and discuss the case, and we look at, I try and get as much environmental information as possible about where it is that we're going to dig, because that informs the methodology to start with. So, for example, with the Walgett one, the large dam, we thought we would have to pump water out, and we thought that we would have all this sludge type stuff left over that we would have to go through by hand. So we had some trucks in there. We set up, we cleared a whole area, and large bays were set up and flagged for each team of the police to rake through all the material that was excavated out by machine. So a machine would go in, excavate out a large chunk, take it over to one of these bays, dump it out, and then the police with their rakes would sort through it that way and try and identify anything that way. That just didn't work straight away. We knew that. It was too sticky. We couldn't see anything. It would take us months to do it that way. So we excavated a little bit further in to try and determine what it is that we were dealing with away from the edges, and you know how we were going to proceed. And that's when it became evident that it was this silt material on top. So our methodology changed in that we had to excavate, instead of going from the top down, which is the way you would normally excavate, from the surface, you excavate down, we had to actually go from the side and go in through the middle of it that way, because of the nature of the dam. So we would excavate large chunks out the front of it, sort through that, and then we would have to have road gravel placed in it as we progress. So when the machine was on top, it wouldn't sink into the ground.
That's a massive task. When we hear people are searching a dam, they're looking for remains in a dam, or they're looking for remains somewhere.
It's normally full of water.
And we assume there are divers there. But the cost and time and labour and expertise involved is massive.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It ended up being the biggest excavation that New South Wales Police have ever undertaken.
When you didn't find any remains in the dam, what happened next?
The next place we looked at, well, they went back, the police and crime scene went back to the original house and were examining that, and there was what looked like, I'd been back at home by this time, so they sent me photographs, what looked like may have been a grave outline next to the house was a possibility. So I came up again, had a look at that, and it wasn't. It was what we call a drip line from the guttering. So if you imagine the guttering of a house, if you've got raindrops that drip down in that nice, perfectly straight line, a metre or so out from the house, that's what it was. But at the same time, while we were there, the place that we were staying at, one of the ladies working there was a child at the time that this had happened. And she mentioned that she remembered finding bones in her backyard and her parents were some relation or some friend of the accused. I'm not sure how that worked. So she said that she remembered finding bones. Should she be talking to the police? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So she got it, you know, we put them in touch. And it turns out that her and her brother would dig in their backyard. And I remember as we used to do that as children as well, dig to China or dig a swimming pool or, you know, dig trenches to play, you know, soldiers and all this kind of stuff. And they were doing that. And they remember finding a whole pile of bones, which they thought, looking back, they believed they were human. They also found some jewellery as well, which they thought was very weird and very unusual. But they thought, oh, no, we're going to get in trouble for this. So they just covered it up and didn't think twice about it and forgot about it. So the detectives met with these people out at this property and they were able to locate an area of where they were digging as children. So we went out there, started excavating and were able to locate these areas of where they had previously excavated. Even though it was all covered up, we were able to identify these old excavations under the ground, which was fantastic. And then we came across a lot of bone, but they were dog bones, unfortunately, not rock spawn. Kept going, and that was the location that we actually uncovered the ring, the R ring as it's known, which was absolutely amazing.
Sorry, what was the R ring?
So that was a ring that Roxalyn used to own, a silver ring with the letter R on it was found, along with a mask and a scalpel packet, because we know that he was in the ambulance at the time of her disappearance. So we found all those together.
On someone else's property. So just coincidentally, you're staying somewhere and the fact that you're in this small town triggered somebody's memory from that long ago.
I've got goosebumps now. It's just amazing. I mean, the public can help so much. You just don't realise. And as your kids, you know, you see things differently and you look back as an adult and you think, oh, hang on a second, maybe it was important.
Then what do the police do there? And what's your involvement still?
So we finished the excavation. We had to keep looking because we hadn't found any human remains, so we had to make sure. So we completed that excavation and then we didn't really have much else to do. We were kind of waiting and wondering what to do next because it was the police always knew that he had had these conversations about getting rid of human remains using pigs. And at the end of that excavation, we drove out to where the pig farm used to be and took one look at it and went, oh, my God. It was this massive paddock covered in white pebbles that all looked like teeth. I'm like, oh, my God, what? How are we going to excavate this? And it's going to take forever, you know, like for something that pigs may or may not be able to pass human teeth intact. Like, how in the world are we going to do this? If we were going to go and try and find human teeth, all of that would have to be examined in fine detail to determine whether it was a human tooth or even part of a human tooth. It was just phenomenal. But we didn't have to do that because it would take weeks and weeks and weeks, and it wasn't feasible at the time. So that's when one of the detectives and I said, hang on a minute, we've all assumed, as you know, talk of the town, that pigs will destroy a human body and that only human teeth survive the digestive process. Let's find out. So I did some research and I found there was no research anywhere in the world that had actually tested this theory. And there were three other cases around the world that I could find that involved humans being left in a pig pen, and they were found shortly after they were disposed there. So the deceased was almost completely intact. So nothing like what we were faced with. So then we started talking about, okay, well, we need to do some experiments, first of all, to find out if it's true, because if it's not true, if nothing is left, then it's pointless spending God knows how long excavating this pig pen. But if something does survive, then we'll have more of an idea of where we stand, like what survives and what is the potential of something surviving after 40 years as well. So we were discussing this with the New South Wales Forensic Science Unit as well. So they came on board and were running the experiment. So, yeah, we ran the experiment, fed them a range of the kangaroo slurry that the pigs would have been fed, as well as human teeth that were donated by people from a dentist as the analogue for humans, because we couldn't use humans to feed to the pigs, obviously. So we used what they used. And the results were really surprising. Yes, pigs do leave human remains. What happens is as they're chewing and munching into these large bones and small bones, the bones fall off out of their mouth and they start trampling them into the ground. So the pig pen is quite soft. So every time they get a bone and they start chewing it, large pieces fall off and it's trampled into the dirt and they're actually saved and protected. They don't go down digging for them anymore. They're buried. And then their scat was also examined. Then we have teeth do survive as well. Bone does, but only very tiny fragments survive the gut process. And the teeth were identifiable as human as well. So for a forensic anthropologist, that is just fantastic news. Fantastic news. So we published a paper on that, obviously, and was presented at the forensic conference last year. And what that meant for the case was we were able to go back to the pig pen. And what we did was we spoke to local people who were able to identify two potential feeding locations where the slurry would be placed over the fence and the pigs would go there to eat. So that helped us focus where our excavation would be. So we started excavating in one area and we found we weren't finding any of the evidence that we found during the experiment. So there weren't any bone pieces that were present. There weren't any teeth that were present. There wasn't anything, basically, just the odd animal bone here and there that could be accounted for by just, you know, anything and everything. You know, animals dying in situ and things like that. There was nothing there that matched what we found during the experiment. So we stopped that excavation there and went to the second location in the pig pen and started excavating there. And straight away we found the types of things that we were finding during the experiment. So we were finding a lot of broken bones, ranging from small right up to large pieces of bone that were easily identifiable. So we knew that we were in the right place then, and we were able to focus our excavation in that area rather than doing the whole pig pen. So we did that and we completed that. Unfortunately, there were no human bones found, but that experiment enabled us to actually test that assumption, that theory that pigs, do they or don't they consume a whole human body or a whole carcass? No, they don't. Large pieces of bone are trampled into the ground and they're protected because they then become covered in the dirt. And that sort of pattern of bones is evident in the archaeological record even 40 years later, deep down, that's been subject to numerous flooding events and erosion and all sorts of things. So that was really valuable information for the case to enable us to excavate that area.
What about teeth?
The human teeth did survive the gut process and there was no evidence of any acid or anything interfering with the teeth at all. If they were broken, it appears that was through the mastication process, not through what happens in the gut.
Did you find any teeth at all in that pig pen?
Human teeth, no. No, unfortunately. A few animal teeth we did, but not human teeth, no.
In terms of your research, I was actually at the talk where it was presented and it was huge. It was absolutely packed. There were some sessions that attracted people from every possible area of forensic science, and that was one of them. And I vividly remember the photos of the various stages. But one of the things I remember is not all the teeth were recovered. So were some of the teeth consumed?
It is likely that through the mastication process, they might have been ground that much that as they've come through, we just weren't, they weren't identifiable as teeth fragments, maybe.
Did you actually tag the teeth?
Yes, they were tagged, yes. Yep. And the forensic odontologist, he was managing and monitoring the dentition or the teeth side of things. I was the bones.
And how small a piece of bone can it be to identify it as human?
It depends on what part of the bone it is. There's a lot of morphological traits on a bone that are clearly human. For example, on long bones like your arm bone and your leg bone, if we have the ends, that's clearly identifiable as human. You look at that and compare it to an animal and they're completely different. It's very, very obvious. If we have, say, a small piece through the middle of the bone, the long bone, what we call the shaft, if it's just a small piece of that without any other characteristics attached to it, it does become more difficult to identify as human or animal, absolutely.
With all this work and the study that you've done, so you've excavated the dam, you've done massive investigations and put a lot of science into this as well to see if it was even worth excavating the pig pen. Then you excavate the pig pen and you still don't find any human remains. Now what?
I think he needs to tell us where she is. I think maybe one day someone will stumble across some remains and it might be Roxalyn if he doesn't say anything. There's no power in holding back that information. You've got nothing left. You know, just give it up.
Does that suggest she wasn't put in the pig pen, her remains, or you just can't exclude that?
Oh, look, he might have been saying that. But who knows? Who knows what these people think, to be honest? I know that we excavated the pig pen where people believed their pigs were fed, like those feeding locations at the time, and they were excavated and cleared. There were no human remains at those locations. Whether there are elsewhere, whether they were fed elsewhere in that pig pen, I don't know, but the two people that were spoken to clearly identified those two locations.
In the end, he was taken to trial and he was charged with Roxalyn's murder. And at the trial, it's interesting, former partners came forward and ascribed him as being very violent to them. And with no body, Roxalyn's got no remains to be found. That hinders a case as well. It's far more difficult to prosecute a murder case without a body. You've got word of people who say he said that the remains would be destroyed in the pig pen, but there's no evidence there was any human in the pig pen. And yet, the jury took 4.5 hours to convict him of Roxalyn's murder.
The circumstantial evidence was overwhelming, to say the least. So they had those letters that she wrote. A handwriting expert was able to say that they were written under duress. We had the R ring, and a gemologist was actually able to say that where it was bent was actually typical of someone trying to pull a ring off someone's finger as well. And I'm sure there was a whole lot of other stuff as well. The fact that her ring was found, and it was also found with a mask and a scalpel cover as well, because he was in the ambulances at the time, that all sort of came together as well. And that's just the evidence that I know of. I know there was a lot more than that as well.
In terms of the study with the pigs, do you think that's likely to help in future cases?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There'll be no more, pigs destroy remains, so we're not going to bother looking. There is a case of, you know, if there's potential, we are definitely going to go looking now as well. And it doesn't matter whether it's a day old, a week old, or 50 years old. Depending on the environment, we know that this evidence can survive that long.
Why has it taken so long to actually do a study to confirm that?
I don't know. And interestingly, I have to put this out there, we're just starting one with Tasmanian devils. It's also been assumed that Tasmanian devils and quolls will completely consume a human body as well. And that's never been tested. So we're looking at doing that one next.
Crime Insiders Forensics is a listener original production. It's hosted by me, Catherine Fox, and is produced by Ed Gooden. Sound design and imaging is by Link Kelly.